time would be met with a gathering of Woodstockian proportions. They came to Chicago to celebrate the music of the Grateful Dead. But they also came for a ceremony, both jubilant and solemn, presided over by the living members of the band. They knew they were all called together to lay the Grateful Dead to rest. Whatever that was on stage playing the music at Fare Thee Well, it was not the Grateful Dead, only an earnest facsimile. To the audience, however, it was enough, symbolic as it was of all they had shared for 50 years, and they combined with the musicians to perform their tribal rites that both acknowledged and reaffirmed the meaning of their community. Perhaps they understood innately that this was also a symbolic gesture of passing the torch. Yet it was anything but the end of an era. The era had ended 20 years before. It was more specifically the end of the Grateful Dead as imagined by Jerry Garcia. Whatever these musicians would go on to do with their work, they had loosened themselves from the grip of the Grateful Dead and its legacy. They had finished what they started 50 years before. With this final punctuation, the legacy was securely defined, illuminated, and now handed off to the future. This often brilliant, always evocative reinterpretation of the Dead songbook by the four original members, with the potent symbolism provided by Trey Anastasio from Phish, the leading second-generation Dead acolytes, clearly showed that they left the inheritance in capable hands. They had made their point. The word had been spread. The music would live on. Early in his post-Garcia education, Lesh figured out that the band's music could have a separate life as repertoire, musical pieces open to reinterpretation. But he missed the importance of the texts. Weir, who saw the songs as the band's body of work, emphasized the texts, which detail the spiritual and philosophic ideas that truly linked the community. In the end, both approaches served to expand and extend the Dead's music into life after Garcia, even if they were bound to conflict. The 4th of July was the perfect date for this celebration. In Hunter's lyrics, he paints a history of a different America. He tells stories, gothic, weird, and whimsical, that evoke the dark underbelly of Mark Twain's America, a grotesque cartoon riddled with piercing truth, a prayer for the wicked and the ridiculous, a call for unity, combined always with themes of freedom and adventure. The blend of Hunter's unique and detailed tales of sin and redemption with Garcia's ability to harness the vast abundance of 20th century American music, gospel, hillbilly, rhythm and blues, jazz, bluegrass, into one compelling musical landscape is what made the Grateful Dead, alongside the Beach Boys, the greatest of American rock bands. All four heroes, Weir, Lesh, Kreutzmann, and Hart, found themselves on the long road to Chicago before they knew they were going there. Without Garcia, they all spent too many lost years trying to find their way. The triumph was that, in the end, they did. Fare Thee Well freed them. They found closure to their personal and creative lives. They could now put the Grateful Dead away. They lived up to their pact with the Deadheads. They could live for the first time without the Grateful Dead beast hanging over their heads, only trailing behind them. So much had changed in 50 years, starting with the scale on which the band operated. They went from a constituency drawn from a small San Francisco neighborhood to a global audience. From the $3 tickets at the Fillmore and Avalon, the band had graduated to luxury boxes and VIP suites costing thousands of dollars in Chicago. The men themselves had grown from young, intrepid innocents to wise tribal elders. The earth had cooled considerably. Mickey Hart likes to think of the Grateful Dead as a hierophany, a revelation of the sacred, a manifestation of the divine, something that looked like a rock band, but was actually something wholly different. Joseph Campbell called the Dead an electric gamelan orchestra. The members of the band used to refer to what they did as diving for pearls. Born of the rich imagination and clear mission of Jerry Garcia, an artist determined to work in a collaborative mode, the other members had followed his lead so completely that after his death, they were left scrambling to figure out what it really was. Each led to his own hero's journey, on wildly divergent paths, to, finally, arrive at the same place at the same time. It was a journey of self-knowledge. They not only had to learn who they were, they had to learn who the Grateful Dead was. In the end, everybody won. Everybody got what they wanted. Lesh could go home, weary from battle, but satisfied with the final encore, and rest easy doing occasional Capitol Theater gigs and staying busy at Terrapin Crossroads. At age 75, surrounded by family more than friends, he could now hang up his sword and suit of armor and put his adversaries behind him, while enjoying one of the most active retirements a musician could imagine. He earned his respite. Terrapin remains his great gift to the community. In its short time, thousands of shows have been presented. Dozens of bands have blossomed, nurturing a wellspring of Dead music for years to come. Hart went back to both active touring with Dead and Company and his various projects in his typical whirlwind way of creating mania and magic, recording imaginative, complex percussion pieces at his home studio on his Sonoma ranch, studying neuroscience, and serving on nonprofit boards. The mystical drummer does yoga every morning in his Japanese garden and drives everybody who works for him crazy with his unflagging energy. Kreutzmann returned to Hawaii. Dead and Company tours provided him enough drum time. He needed to restore himself with the long, lazy tropical days in Hawaii, snorkeling, surfing, fishing. His book brought Kreutzmann out of the shadows, and his pride in the Grateful Dead is unquestioned, even if he remains the most aloof of all four from the legacy. His primal needs are less complex, but the once brutish, angry young man has mellowed into an acerbic but avuncular white-bearded grandfather. Weir, the troubadour, dove into Dead and Company and picked up his schedule of guest appearances, dusting off his solo act, appearing regularly at benefits at the Sweetwater and elsewhere. With Fare Thee Well in his rearview mirror, he was free to take the repertoire and be himself. He will stay on the road the rest of his life, spinning tales with his guitar. He found his destiny long before the final Fare Thee Well, merely another adventure in an adventure-filled life, and, as always, he will be on his way to the next project. And for all the sweat, goofs, blown cues, and impossible tasks, Trey Anastasio got what he came for as much as anybody. He lived out the fantasy of a lifetime. He belonged to the Grateful Dead. The night after the first concert at Levi's Stadium, the most tense and intimidating moment of his career, Anastasio sent his wife a text message. "That was the most fun I've ever had playing music in my whole life." Certainly, Peter Shapiro got what he wanted. His concert and all the ancillaries couldn't have been more successful. But for Shapiro, the victory was much larger than box office grosses. He became a made man, the single most important concert producer of his day. "Bill Graham without the yelling," said one Dead associate. He picked his way through a minefield to reach his goals, and in the end, after a series of historic concerts, he would rest gratified that he had done what he set out to do as well as he could have. Shapiro may not have been there when the Dead started, but he was there to help put them away, and they couldn't have done it in a grander, more extravagant style. But it was the Deadheads who won the biggest prizes. In a stunning statement of joyful unity, the Deadheads proclaimed their independence over the 4th of July weekend in Chicago. They celebrated an entire nation of Deadheads and saluted the Core Four and their associates as the spiritual leaders of a movement they clearly had no intention of abandoning. In fact, over the 20 years since Garcia died, the band's impact and influence and their audience may have grown to an even greater magnitude than when the Dead existed. It is an astonishing phenomenon, and this would never happen to, say, the Jay Giles Band, or even the Rolling Stones without Jagger. But the Grateful Dead, in spite of everything, continued to have momentum with the combination of a staggering number of great songs the band added to the catalog over the years, and the extraordinary, revolutionary concepts about the possibilities of a rock band. The Deadheads won not only because they summoned forth these concerts and willed them into existence, but because now they were the band. They brought the spirit. The musicians only played the songs. It was the Deadheads who filled the stadiums with the kind of joy they so well remembered and turned the shows into the harmonic convergence they were. Whatever had been lost had been recovered. The truth was what Mickey Hart said in an interview way back at the beginning of this journey, fresh after Garcia's death. The Deadheads are the Grateful Dead now. These people wanted to go to one more Grateful Dead concert. And they did. It did not matter who was on the bandstand or what they played. Fare Thee Well was a genuine Grateful Dead concert. The last one. This has been a Hachette Audio production of Fare Thee Well, the final chapter of the Grateful Dead's long, strange trip. Written by Joe Selvin, with Pamela Turley. Read by John Glushevich. Produced by Dennis Kao. Directed by John Kavarik. Sound editing by Sean Bolter and Ian Lehman. Mixing and mastering by Jeremy Wesley. Production supervised by Elise Green. Fare Thee Well is also available in print and digital formats from DeCapo Press, an imprint of Perseus Books, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by Joe Selvin. Audio production copyright 2018, Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.